What's going on? I'm Jarek 120 here on 120. This is my podcast. I'm going to do what I want, say what I want. This is the first of it. We'll talk about magic, of course. We'll talk about pro wrestling, current events, YouTubing, Los Angeles, life, love, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And today I have a very special guest with me. It's you may know him as Assad. You may know him as 52 Cards. You may know him as formerly Decks and Contests. I have with me the man himself, the creator and owner, content producer of the 52cards.com website and everything that is 52 Cards. That's Cards, K-A-R-D-S, and Assad. So what are you doing here in L.A.?
What's up, man? I came here to see you.
Aw, you're such a sweetheart. Such a sweetheart.
Yeah, no, I mean, I live in Northern California usually, but every now and then I like to come down to Southern L.A., or Southern California, I should say.
Yep, Assad hit me up from over in the Bay Area and said, hey, I'll be in town. Can I crash at your place? And always have a welcome door here at the California Foreigner House. And you can see Steve and Alex and everyone.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
But I've been seeing your projects going on. The 52 Cards website is revamped. You got a 52 Magi group going on that's on the Facebook over there.
Yeah.
You're trying to get more into Twitter, of course, as we all are, social media in general.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting stuff. It seems like the online magic community, it's really exploding right now.
Yeah.
You know, so many people are getting into it. So many people really actively learning. Like, you see the level of dedication that you see in these younger guys. Did you ever see that when we, like, started learning magic?
Well, I only know personally, I was the only kid that I knew that was trying to learn magic.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any friends, so I was just trying to, trying to distract myself, and
right.
I'd be learning magic, and that's what interests me. But no, it's fascinating as far as, you know, the internet is concerned, that there are people in Tennessee who make road trips up to Michigan to meet other magicians that want to just make videos and hang out and be friends, I guess.
Absolutely. The internet has been a real blessing for the community, because, you know, before, it was hard to find other magicians. When I grew up, I had, I guess, two friends who were also magicians, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I was considered lucky. A lot of, like yourself, a lot of other magicians, they didn't know anybody else. So it's nice that through the internet, through YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, these different websites, they can still connect and, you know, become friends with other magicians, bounce ideas off each other. It's a really good time to be a student of magic.
Yeah, it's a good time for the people who grew up learning magic that can, you know, teach magic if they so desire. And we'll talk about the idea of exposing magic on the internet a little later, and your thoughts on how you feel about that.
Controversial subject, yeah.
Right. But it's very cool because I can relate to that kind of idea of, you know, you don't have other people who are interested in magic. Magic was such a rare niche to be interested in versus, you know, the football, the basketball, and what's going on in the world of comedy and movies. Like,
Which might be part of the appeal. Like, when I think back about why, like, I decided to get into magic, I think part of it was because there weren't very many magicians out there and I wanted to be kind of different.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool in that way.
I think, I think it's got to be, there's some probably subconscious appeal to it that you'll probably figure out later. That's interesting that you say that, though. I never could get sports. I was never good at sports, hockey, football, any of that. So I could use my hands, like, and psychology to my advantage. That's what appealed to me about magic, is you're playing someone's brain, it's not really physical.
Right, you can compete in the mental arena.
Yes. You trick people into thinking that you're smarter than you really are.
Exactly.
What else was I going to say about that? I guess the regard of you have the 52 Magic group, Area 52 on Facebook.
So I guess a brief overview of what's going on there. Like, in the past, we had the discussion forum on the 52 Cards website, right? But now we're moved that whole community over to Facebook. And since then, like, it's just been extremely active. You know, it's like over 1,000 members now, and just people posting every day, like sharing their videos, sharing their ideas, asking questions. and
answering questions.
Answering questions. And it's just nice for like people to log into Facebook and then in their newsfeed see like content that they care about.
Right. I think maybe a big part of those websites and you know, they have the encyclopediaofmagic.com and the forums, and there's a ton of other forums, but the whole idea that you have to sign in and remember a password and username to a website versus simply just logging into Facebook and it's right there, and then you get a notification of someone asking, hey, like, what happens if this happens?
Yeah, there's a lot less of a barrier, you know, and people are going to log into Facebook anyways. Like, I see the advantages of having, like, an on-site, full-fledged forum community as well, but, like, I think the level of activity is going to be much less there, and you can just reach a lot more people through the more popular social media networks.
Right. So if anyone's listening to the podcast that hasn't heard about Area 52 that are up and coming magicians, like how can they find it? Is it just facebook.com or is it more of a search?
That's a really good question. I'll find the URL right now. I don't even know. I think it's like facebook.com/group/52cards maybe, but I'll find that. Yeah. Okay. So it's facebook.com/groups/52cards. Or you can just go to 52cards.com and then click the community tab in the navigation menu and you'll find it that way as well.
Yeah, I think that's the fast way.
That's probably the
52cards.com website with the K. And but going back to when you first started getting into magic, like what was the appeal behind it? And do you remember the first magician you saw? Or
I do. I remember it quite clearly, actually. It was 8th grade Spanish class. And a friend of mine, well, we weren't like close friends at the time, but you know, an acquaintance. He was doing this like card manipulation techniques, like back palming and like making cards vanish, disappear, producing them. And I was just blown away. I was so impressed by the level of skill involved.
Did you know what he was doing, or was it?
I didn't. Like, I knew like he was doing something, but I didn't know the specifics. And I remember after seeing him do that, like, I started bothering him a lot, trying to get him to teach me, you know, and show me like how it was done. And you know, he was a good magician. He made sure that I was really like committed and I wanted to learn. And then like he kind of showed me the ropes, and we eventually became really good friends. And then through him, I was able to learn a lot. And then I just started studying on my own as well. I read a lot of books.
Any books you can remember or recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. Roller Road to Card Magic is always a good place to start. The Card College series is really good. Art of Astonishment by Paul Harris is a great series. Classic Magic of Larry Jennings, very good book.
Because whenever I see a deck of cards in your hand, and this is whether it's through the computer or just live in person when I see you playing, it just seems like the way you handle them, it's the way people should handle cards as aspiring magicians. It's very delicately and just gently, almost, it's almost the way you hold the cards is almost like an art form in itself. When I see you, I have these skinny fingers and monster looking hands, but I don't know, it just seems like whenever I see you holding cards, it seems like a deck of cards belongs in your hands.
Yeah, it's a very gentle handling almost. I think when you see new guys start to learn sleight of hand and start to handle cards, you can immediately notice that they're like newer to it because they hold the deck with so much tension, and like it's almost like they're holding it too tightly, you know. But you know, the more you experience handling your deck of cards and learning moves, the more loose you can be about it, and then it just becomes kind of like a natural extension of you. Like, I think about a deck of cards as just a tool, you know.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing.
And it's very loose. It's very, very natural.
Do you by chance get questions from fans asking essentially what card tricks they can show a girl to impress them? I get questions of what trick can I show to ask a girl to prom or ask a girl out or to something or other lines. Have you ever gotten anything like that?
I actually don't get those questions too much because you put out those videos where you like actually demonstrate that kind of stuff. So I guess that's why you get so many of those questions. Me personally, maybe a handful of times I have. I personally have never really used magic for that. You know, not that you can't. You definitely can, and it'll work. I just personally don't have that much experience using it to kind of have that kind of effect.
Manipulate women.
Right. And
yeah, I always felt I reply to those kind of questions the same way. It's just like, you know, it's just as you said, it's a tool. It's an extension of yourself. It's not who you are. You know, when you're thinking of trying to figure out how to ask a girl to prom or whatever, these younger guys listening, I think it's more do something that the girl would like, not something that you would like.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, it'd be cool if someone did this to me to ask. But it's kind of cheating. It's a crutch.
Yeah. No, I guess what I would say to that is if you want to do that, then go for it. But make sure that the magic is representing your personality and it's not replacing it.
Right.
You know? So you use magic to demonstrate who you are and what your personality is, what your character is. But don't become like the cheesy magician.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very easy to do.
And that's what I will
sometimes.
Oh, it's so easy. I've gone to bars and I'll see guys handling a deck of cards that, you know, just as you were saying, can't handle a deck of cards. And I'll go over and I'll watch him do the trick. And there was one time in particular, it was very interesting. He was showing an attractive girl a magic trick.
Yeah.
And I could spot on what he was doing. Now, I wasn't about to ruin it or be like a tough cookie or whatever. But basically, he went to go do the trick and he messed up. But because I was watching, I knew what her card was.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. I could have said, I could have gone in or whatever. But it was interesting because I talked to him after the fact. And he's like, yeah, I just do magic to get the girls. Just like, yeah, it seems like it's really working, buddy.
Yeah, it's not a great reason to get into it. I think a lot of people, like, that's their original spark. I mean, it's not horrible, but you have to really understand the art form to perform it well.
You can be the greatest technician with the cards and the handling and the ability to deliver the mechanics of the trick, but if you don't have the panache and the personality and the style, you can do the simplest trick, but with enough storytelling and personality, it's way more powerful than a convoluted effect.
Yeah, that's a really important point that you make, because a lot of the younger magicians these days, they spend hours and hours practicing really like complex sleight of hand techniques, which is cool. I mean, but they neglect the much larger picture, which is the performance aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
And how you present it, because you can perform a self-working trick that takes 2 minutes to learn, but if you have great presentation, that's a much more powerful effect than, you know, a sleight of hand piece with no personality at all behind it.
There are a lot of effects out there and tricks that take place purely in the spectator's hands. Like, you give them the cards, they shuffle, they deal out everything, and the trick just works. It's a self-working trick.
Yeah.
And you can make it seem... A big thing that I do is I have a juice deck, which is a marked deck.
Right. And, yeah, you showed me that the last time I was here. That was pretty awesome.
And so when I'll have people who are really tough or, I've run out of ideas, my standard tricks to show them, I'll bring out the juice deck.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, it's, well, why don't you explain it?
It's essentially a B deck of cards, because the B deck, the way it's designed, is much like the old 3D pictures where you have to look past the picture and unfocus your eyes.
So it'll only work with B cards?
To my knowledge, yes. Okay. It'll certainly work best
with B cards. Okay.
Just because of the kind of unfocused look that B cards already have naturally.
Yeah.
And so these cards are marked at both the bottom and the top, and you read the bottom because it's symmetrical.
Right.
So at the bottom it says like 6C.
Yeah, so it's like the special chemical that you apply to the back of the card, and I guess if you look at it a specific way, if you cross your eyes a little bit...
Right, if you just, like, unfocus your eyes and look past it...
Then you can see the marking, but if you look at it just normally, like a normal person would, you won't see anything.
So, right, and what's very interesting about them is the more light that's on them and the closer they hold it to their eyes, the more impossible it is to see.
Exactly.
It's easier to read the cards in a darker light at a further distance.
Right.
So
a very advanced marking system. It's expensive stuff though, right?
Yeah, it's like $120 a bottle for a little. I mean, 4 ounce bottle.
How many decks do you think you could make out of it?
You could probably make 10.
Okay.
If not more, depending on how you use it.
Yeah.
I've made 3.
That's a pretty good business idea. Buy a bottle and make 10 decks and resell them.
Yep, exactly. And I've
someone's gonna do that.
But the problem with that is, what if people get the deck and they can't see the markings?
Yeah, that's true.
So that's why I got the juice. You can get the juice at playingcards.net. Or, no, it's out there. It's markedcards.net. That's where I remember getting them, markedcards.net.
Nice.
It's called, like, the juice system. And you just take a Q-tip and you paint it yourself, and then you take a paper towel, wipe it off, and it's there forever.
It's awesome.
So anytime I come across someone who I basically don't really know what to do, take out the juice deck, I'll give them the deck, they'll shuffle it, and then I'll take the cards and I'll spread them across the tape, across the floor.
Yeah.
I'll just be like, take one card. And they'll just look at it, milk it, and I know what it is,
right,
that when I reveal it, it's so much powerful.
It's just clean.
Than doing this long 5-minute thing that's looks pretty,
right,
but it doesn't attach them emotionally. So when you were growing up and you were learning, how would you get better?
I used to spend a lot of time by myself just practicing sleight of hand. So I fell into that trap. Like, when I first started learning, I definitely focused a lot more on practicing technique versus showmanship. I wish it was the other way around, but just because of who I was, like, I got really good at sleight of hand. And then once I felt extremely confident, I would go out and perform it to classmates, to my little brother sometimes. He got so sick of my magic eventually. But how did I get better? I read a lot of books. I practiced a lot. I was a sponge when I first got into magic. You know, for 3-4 years after I first got into it, I would look everywhere for more information.
Yeah.
I would go online. At the time, you know, there wasn't much free information online. But there were companies like Penguin Magic. Illusionist was there at the time.
That was about it.
I think that was it. Yeah, that's all I can remember. Oh, and then there was cardtrickcentral.com. I don't even know if that website still exists.
Was it just free? Or was it
Yeah, that was like one of the few free websites out there, but it wasn't all that good, you know? So I would go everywhere to find information. I would go to the local magic shop every now and then with a buddy of mine, and, you know, we would just study together. We'd try new things out on our fellow classmates, see what worked, see what didn't work. We would study each other's magic and see, like, what the weak points were, what the strong points were. I had a very big advantage having a very close friend who was also a magician. That really helped a lot, I would say. So, yeah, I mean, hey, advice for you guys out there. If you are into magic, try to find a buddy. It makes it a lot more enjoyable.
And, yeah, and you learn a lot more faster.
And you're
going
to learn a lot faster. And it doesn't have to be someone next to you. It can be someone online these days. Find someone to Skype with. Find, you know, there's chat rooms these days. There's tiny chat sessions. You know, there's so many ways to interact with others.
So many, yeah.
You're going to get a lot more information that way, and you're going to filter through all of the bad information a lot quicker.
What's interesting about magic is, like, probably, hopefully, you're at the younger guys are at a more pure age, but nowadays, man, it's just competition. Who is better? Who's the better performer? Who's the better storyteller? Who's the better handler?
Yeah.
It's just, so it's unfortunate for, I guess, us adults growing up. But back then, I didn't have anyone to really. I felt anyone who was a competition, like, I don't know, there's this thing about magicians, because it is so, very isolated. Like, it's not sports, it's like, oh, I'm digging right. into it because I'm going to be the only one who can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very, if someone else is doing, then I felt it always got very territorial.
Yeah, I remember being competitive, too.
Yeah.
It's like, who can do the better effect?
And
I would get mad when my friends would perform one of my favorite effects. I'd be like, come on, man, that's my trick. You're not supposed to do that. But yeah, you know, it is what it is. How did you learn, by the way?
I learned, you know, I learned from Brad Christian at Illusionist.
Okay.
They had the Ninja series on VHS.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And essentially what I did to get better, though, is I had a video camera that my parents always had.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take it And I would eventually got my own or asked for one of my own for Christmas.
Yeah.
So I had my own video camera that used the Mini 8 tapes. And I would just set it up and I would just film me because I had no friends. Mm-hmm. So I would just film me doing the same routine, the same story, the same sleight of hand over and over for like 5 minutes straight. And then I would go back and I'd watch the tape for 5 minutes and see what angles worked and what didn't. Right. And I'd kind of move my position each time.
Check your angles.
Exactly. And so what's cool nowadays is, you know, webcams weren't available back then. Camera phones weren't available back then.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone can, it's one thing to do it in a mirror, but when you're doing it in a mirror, you can't really look at, you're focusing more on the mirror.
Right.
And not on your hands and the delivery.
Yeah, cameras are great.
So, I mean, now you just take your camera phone, record you doing the same sleight of hand over and over.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much how I learned to watch my angles and get good as far as the slights.
Right, right. I mean, I'll still do that. Not so much for sleight of hand anymore, but just for scripting purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I have a new routine I'm working on or something I'm trying to tweak, I'll turn on my webcam and I'll just pretend like there's an audience member right in front of me and I'll just be speaking out loud, going through my whole thing. And then I'll watch it again and I'll try to cut out the extra words, like the parts of it that are unclear.
Trim the fat.
Exactly. It's a great way to learn. You can get your own feedback that way by just recording yourself and then taking out the stuff, you cutting out the bad stuff and then keeping the good stuff. Do that over and over again. It's a great way.
Have you learned Torn by Daniel Garcia?
Yeah. Well, I learned Torn Restored Car that was very similar. It's like the similar concept, I think. I don't remember who put it out, but I have a feeling it's a very similar method.
I was just going to say the first Torn by Daniel Garcia, that was, it's so frustrating to do it in the webcam. It's just, it's very angle sensitive and like windows in your hands. I have like the long skinny fingers. I don't have really fat on my fingers. So it's pretty easy for me to have windows.
Right. That's the one where you tear into four and then one by one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And with the signature.
With the signature on the back.
Gotcha. Yeah. I remember that effect. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's so good.
It's great, especially for the camera.
Yeah.
For in real life, like I've done it a few times and it was okay, but I don't know. It's not the kind of effect that I tend to perform in person.
Right. I have to be, I'll only perform the really risky, tough stuff that I have, you know, there's not too many tricks that I learn new nowadays.
Yeah.
But there are like the Torns and the Wreck by Daniel Madison.
Oh, you were just telling me about that earlier.
Yeah. And basically I'll have to, like, in my documentary, I talked about how like I do drink alcohol occasionally, but that's very occasional. I was telling Asad yesterday when he first came in that I've only been drunk four times or intoxicated four times. Mm-hmm. But I guess it was interesting because when I am there, I feel like such a better magician and such a better performer. And that's when I will bust out the ballsier stuff, like Torn. And I think I'll be getting away with it. And in my mind, I am getting away with it.
Right,
and I won't find out. I won't find out till 2 months later. Till you did this Torn trick and I saw everything you were doing or something like that.
It's okay. You enjoyed it.
But in the time, they thought it was awesome.
Right. It's all that matters.
Now, you're from North Carolina originally? Or
No, were... I'm from Colorado originally. And then my family ended up moving out to North Carolina later on. But I grew up mainly in Colorado.
And that's where you started learning.
Yeah.
What was it about? Because I know you're more into web development now and you're self-employed. Congratulations.
Thank
just
you,
recently.
Appreciate it.
And the whole idea of, you know, parents and a lot of people think magic is just a phase that kids will go through, mm-hmm. just as we all go through different phases. I used to study witchcraft and nice. I've gone through a skateboarding phase and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But magic was just one of those things that it withered, but it's always probably going to be a part of my life to some capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think for me, like I did go through several phases. There were times I started magic probably like 12 years ago now. But within that 12-year time span, there have been phases where I haven't touched the deck of cards.
Yeah.
You know? So it went through these on and off phases. I always, like, loved it and everything, but for a couple months here, a couple months there, you know, I was just focused on other things. I didn't actively practice. But yeah, it's been my...
Would you perform every now and then when you're going through those?
During those phases, I wouldn't, no.
Hmm.
No. But the interesting thing is that every time I came back to Magic, it came back stronger. Like, a lot stronger. That's an interesting thing, and I've noticed that in other skills that I practice as well.
Yeah.
If you drop it and you go on hiatus for a little while and you come back, you just take it to the next level. You know, so I think it's kind of a natural thing. I never dropped it completely. I mean, I almost always carry the deck of cards on me, but I just wasn't actively learning anything new.
Right.
I wasn't actively practicing anything new. That being said, it has been my longest running hobby, if that's what you want to call it, that I have had. And my parents thought it was a phase. They were hoping it would just, like, go away after a couple months. And of course it didn't, you know. 10 years later, here I am.
Because you're a smart guy. What schooling did you... Because you were, by trade, an engineer.
Yeah, so, like, I come from a family of electrical engineers. I mean, my dad's an engineer. My brother's an engineer. My other brother's an engineer. I was an engineer. So I...
Good enough engineer to go to the capital San Jose of marketing. And I didn't know how big... Sorry to cut you off, but I didn't know how big of a business and rich area, quote-unquote, San Jose was until I came to visit you.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Apparently, it's, like, the most expensive place to live in either the U.S. or the world. One of those two, I can't remember. But it's up there because, I mean, it's Silicon Valley. There's so much innovation going on there. The engineering industry is just exploding right now. And, I moved out to San Jose about 2 years ago now for a position.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was cool. Like, I like engineering. I love technology. But I guess it just got to the point where I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to be on my own schedule, not have a boss, you know, kind of just be free.
Build your own dream instead of building someone else's.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, that's my background, like a brief overview. So I think a lot of the people in my life, when they see me quit an engineering job and start doing magic tricks, or it's not even what it is, but creating magic content for the internet, they're like confused.
Right.
Because it's so different from, like, what everybody else in my family did and what everyone else I grew up with did.
And you're essentially, like, you're taking a pay cut in that. Like, you walked away from a full-time, steady, secure engineering job.
Yeah.
Because now you're self-sufficient.
Right, right. No, but, I mean, yeah, I'm taking a pay cut for now, but I, with the internet these days, I mean, that's where the future is. There's so much more potential there. So I'm confident that, you know, a couple years down the road, I'll be doing even better than I was as an engineer. Probably, I would imagine.
What are the projects that you've been working on now, as far as, because you're a web developer as well. What have you been, like...
So I build a lot of client websites. Not a lot, but like a few here and there. I build my own websites. You know, I used 52 cards to learn web development. Before I built 52 cards, I didn't know anything about web development.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know if you were there during the early stages of that website. It's pretty ugly.
I don't know if I was there during the early stages, but it still looked better than, not knocking Mismag, but it still looked better than the Card Trick Teacher.
Yeah, well, the Card Trick Teacher, I mean, that website's very successful. And yeah, it is a very, like, 90s looking website, but I guess people just get used to it and they know exactly how to use it. So it does strong. But yeah, I mean, 52 Cards went through a lot of phases as I was becoming a better and better web developer. And I don't know, I think my interest in web development just comes to, the source of that is just a really strong fascination with the internet in general. I think the way that we're now able to communicate with anyone in the world pretty much instantaneously, that's just like a magical thing.
Yeah.
And people take it for granted, you know?
Skype, FaceTime.
Oh, it's just unbelievable what's possible, what we're capable of now. And I'm just excited to really delve into the internet more and more. Like, magic partly is I lost my train of thought. You might have to cut that out.
I was gonna say that you made me lose my train of thought. I was going to say, bring it back to the beginning of your YouTube channel and what made you essentially pick the Decks and Contests name, and what sparked the interest of not even what your channel has evolved to now, but just in the beginning, what was your kind of like mindset?
Right, right. So in the beginning, I was really fascinated with YouTube way before I had my own channel. I remember in college, I would spend hours every day watching YouTube videos. I was a big fan of Shaytards, The Young Turks. Those are some of the channels that I really followed. A bunch of others, too. And I always thought to myself, man, it'd be really cool to be a content producer and, you know, have my own platform where I can communicate with people who have similar interests to me and really contribute to this YouTube community. I thought it was a cool thing. So I started my old channel back when I was in college, and at the time I was just doing like these simple performances in front of my webcam. And then after I graduated, the timing just worked out right, because that's right when Miss Mag started a contest. Mm. I think it was contest 27. It was like best impromptu card trick. I had just graduated. I had plenty of free time, so I entered it. And I think like a couple thousand people entered, but I ended up winning.
Wow.
So I instantly got like a lot of credibility, a lot of exposure. And so I guess I used that momentum to launch 52. Well, at the time it was called Decks and Contests. I changed the channel name later.
Right.
I already had Decks and Contests, the channel name, from like a couple months before, because I thought I was really just going to do deck reviews and contests on there. I was never expecting to do tutorials. I wasn't really interested in that until like after the contest. There was a lot of demand
how you did it.
Not just that, but just like learning the skills that I demonstrated in the video, because I started going through YouTube just to see what was available at the time, and I couldn't find any channels that really taught sleight of hand in a comprehensive way. You know, we had Miss Mag, who was teaching all these self-working card tricks. Right. Of course, people love that. But I couldn't find anyone who was really doing a lot of technical sleight of hand technique. There was a few here and there, but no one who like really dedicated to it.
Right, or probably produced it properly or right. Well. Or...
Yeah, I didn't think anyone was doing it like
well. The way it should have been done.
Exactly. So then I was like, okay, this is something I can do. I started putting out a few tutorials, and it was really well-received. I could tell that these kids were really passionate about learning this, and they were just thirsty for more resources and more accessible resources. So that was my original motivation for starting the channel, and then since then it's just grown and grown, and now I really think that the next generation of magicians, their primary resource is going to be YouTube.
Yeah.
Probably
that for most any type of learning,
anything. Yeah, I mean, check out Khan Academy. Have you seen that? Khanacademy.com. Amazing website, amazing guy. His name's Saul Khan, and I guess a couple of years ago he started just uploading tutorials for simple math problems. You know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and the views started coming in, and now it's launched to this full-fledged online academia program that's available to anyone in the world. And the goal is really to provide a free college quality education.
Wow.
To anybody. And you know, you check out the channel, millions of views.
Is this a YouTube channel?
Started out as a YouTube channel. Now it's a website. He received like $1 million from Bill Gates, $1 million from Google. Like, he's got all these investors now.
Holy crap.
And it's completely reforming the way that education happens. So it's not, of course, it's not just magic. It's like any skill that you want, YouTube is the place to go to learn it. I learned guitar from YouTube just in the last couple of years.
I've been learning some of the guitar from YouTube too.
Oh yeah? I don't see your guitar. Where's your guitar?
It's in Alex's room. Well, it's Alex's guitar. I kind of take it out.
Yeah.
And I'll bust my windpipes on him.
So what about you? Like, what was your original motivation for joining the YouTube community or producing content?
I got really jaded towards magic because there were kids who would make it a competition. They'd spoil things. So there was that was pissing me off. And then there were also the same people coming up to me. Hey, show us a new magic trick. Show us another magic trick.
Yeah.
And when you hear that enough from the same kids and the same people, the same social circles, you run out of tricks fast to show them.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I don't have anything new to show you, but now I have this pressure on myself to be the magic kid. Which, right. I don't know if you were the Magic Kid.
I was. I hated that label.
I hated it.
Ugh, sucks.
And it basically became a point where, you know, 4 years after high school, I'd be hanging out with a friend, and his girlfriend called him. This is a true story. We're in my backyard about to film some videos. His girlfriend calls him. He's like, hey, I'm hanging out with Evan. He's like, you know Evan Cloyd? The Magic Kid. Yeah, the Magic Kid. Just, so that was just for that to be your identity. Like at the end of the day, it's cool because it's just like, yeah, you can identify. People will remember you because people will remember you.
Yeah.
Period. That's the bottom line. But the Magic Kid label,
it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You know, because in the beginning, you want people to recognize you for your magic. But then what happens is like they only recognize you for your magic.
Exactly.
And it's just this weird thing.
And so I was just really jaded towards it. And then I took a break from magic for 2 years, and I'd do it at parties and social events and stuff like that. But I would not do it nearly as much or nearly the level of effects that I was doing.
Yeah.
And so finally it just got to a point where YouTube was coming around, and I was just like, you know what? There are other people who are more passionate about magic than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to just understand it mm-hmm. well enough
yeah.
to be able to teach it, and I don't care about the magician's code. I went into the channel seeing Miss Mag and seeing that he just showed his hands.
Right.
And you in the beginning, you only just showed your hands as well.
Yeah.
And same with Andy Field. He only just showed his hands. So I went in consciously saying, I'm going to be the guy that people can put a face to. And if I get blackballed,
like you, I don't give a shit about that.
Because I don't care. Now this is gonna sound bad, but at that point in my life, I did not care about the magic community enough to think I was going to stay in the magic community.
I gotcha. So it was kind of like a stepping stone almost.
It was just a, because I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't do anything that like distracted me. I had to keep myself entertained.
Yeah, okay.
So I was just like, I'm going to make these videos and I'm going to help these kids, and it'll keep me entertained. It'll keep me busy.
Right.
And, but no, I didn't expect anything to really.
Yeah.
I just did it as a way to entertain myself.
It was just like a project.
And take, you know, take the art form very not seriously.
Interesting.
And, I mean, eventually it evolved and my kind of perception has changed, and, you know, the channel and magic in general have changed my life, and I'm very grateful for it. But that was the mindset at the time, was I don't want these kids who are more passionate, truly passionate about something that I could help them with, and my knowledge of it just being locked in a cage when I could help them.
Interesting. Yeah, I had a bit of a different experience. I remember I was very, very hesitant, like when I decided to upload my first tutorial, because I remember when I was like in college and really into magic practicing, I would get frustrated when I saw tutorials on YouTube. But then I realized it's not so much because people are teaching magic on YouTube; it was more because the tutorials were just really bad, and it was like these kids who didn't even know what they were teaching, and they were getting all these views, and like people were taking them seriously and actually learning from them. And I was like, oh, this just isn't a good situation. So I was still hesitant about it because, you know, part of magic is the exclusivity of it.
Right.
You know, I think that was a part of the appeal for me when I first got into it. It was like, I want to be the only kid who can do this, or one of the few kids who can do this. I want to be interesting in this way. And when I originally saw all this stuff on YouTube, I was like, oh no, it's killing the art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
everyone's gonna know how to do everything.
I was like, oh man, now people can just go into YouTube, type in like, how do you do this trick, and they'll figure it out. But then I looked into it a bit further, and I started to see YouTube in a different way. And YouTube isn't like a place where you go to stumble upon stuff. Yeah, of course, like the most popular video, like the homepage, you'll see random stuff that you're not necessarily subscribed to. But YouTube is a big place now.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge. You're not going to find stuff you're not looking for on YouTube.
I think the statistic in 2010 was like 72 hours worth of content is being uploaded to YouTube every minute.
It's a massive library. So now, like, the analogy I always make is, You can go to a bookstore and learn how to do magic. There's nothing wrong with that. So why is there anything wrong with learning from YouTube? You know, YouTube is actually a really great learning platform because it's so interactive. Students can be in direct communication with the teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Which is huge. It's a big deal. They can comment. They can ask questions in the video description or in the video comment section. And at the end of the day, I guess what I realized most is that our spectators, our audience, they have no interest in going online and figuring out how we do the tricks.
Yeah, no.
They really don't.
I'll perform magic to people, and when I personally perform magic nowadays, I don't sit there and when they say, you know, we always get the question, how'd you do that?
Yeah.
I don't sit there and tell them how I did it.
Of course not.
Yeah. But I will now. I was like, do you really want to know? And
yeah.
I was like, yeah, yeah. I was like, if you really want to know, I teach how to do it on my channel. You can go check it out.
Oh, interesting. See, I haven't gone that far yet.
Yeah.
I'm actually very secretive about 52 cards. I don't tell anybody my website. Not any of my friends or
right.
the people I know. Because I perform for them, you know, and I like to be able to have that effect on them.
Right.
So I'm not at that point yet where I'll openly promote it. Like, I'm really proud of 52 cards and what I've done there, but, like, on my personal Facebook page or...
Well, I remember that was a huge double-edged sword for your up-and-coming, building your channel as well, was just you wanted it to be exclusively for magicians, like,
yeah.
for the working magician.
Yeah, I really do.
And
yeah.
not for, just...
I mean, if someone's interested in learning and they take the time to go on YouTube and do their research and find my videos, no problem. That's cool. But, like, I don't actually...
Trying to create a viral video and doing it just for the subs, unlike some people.
No, hey, no, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, like, a different take on it, you know? I see my channel as being a resource for people who really want to become magicians, not just, like, learn a trick here and there. Of course they can do that there. But when I create my content, I create it with a mindset that my audience is real students of magic.
Right.
You know?
I'm sitting here talking with Asad from 52 Cards. If you aren't subscribed to his YouTube channel, you should be. YouTube.com/DexandContest still, correct?
I hate that channel name so much.
I don't know
what I was thinking.
But you can go on YouTube and go to the 52Cards, KARDS.com website, and that will link to the videos, which will link to, of course, the YouTube channel.
Yeah, you can just search for 52 Cards in YouTube. You'll find it.
There you go. Simple as that. And it's been... So check out the YouTube channel. Of course, subscribe to How to Disturb Reality. I'm going to try to revamp that website soon. This is the first 120 podcast. I'll probably try to do more of these with guests all of the time. And we're going to keep it going. So the whole idea of exposing magic, we were talking about that. And
yeah.
just what's right and what's wrong, what's okay, what's not okay. And because it is a touchy subject and... I always hate to burn bridges, but I mean, we're not saying we're going to burn any bridges, but I guess just what are your beliefs on that idea?
Yeah, well, I don't consider what I do as being exposure. I think exposure is kind of like a dirty word because that, when you say exposure, that assumes that you're revealing the effect just for the sake of appeasing people's curiosity to expose it, not to teach it.
Right.
You know? I try to teach it for the people who actually want to learn. And for that purpose, like if you look at any of my videos, they're not entertaining at all, unless you're interested in information. You know, my videos are really boring unless you want to learn magic, you know?
Plus, they're pretty, they are very in-depth. So anyone
yeah.
sitting there trying to figure out how something worked probably won't, they'll probably have to sit through a long video to really... get the understanding of it.
Yeah, so I think we need to kill this exposure word. I mean, exposure is like the masked magician going on national television and then like revealing stuff, because that's for entertainment. That's for revealing what the secret
right,
is.
Right, the masked magician, right.
That's what exposure is in my mind. But teaching a sleight of hand technique or an effect on YouTube...
Because the masked magician, he wouldn't teach anything. They would just say, well, here's the hole in the stage, and he would...
Here's the behind the scenes.
Check the mirror, and... But he would never break down of like all right, now go to your local Ace Hardware store and get two magnets and get some Gorilla Tape and make sure to cut the shirt this way. And
right. There's a big difference between exposure and tutorials or teaching.
Right.
You know? But yeah, in terms of burning bridges, I expect some level of resistance, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, and I'm curious to hear from your perspective as well, I haven't received as much resistance as I was expecting. When I first started the channel, I thought there would be a lot more backlash. But it turns out that I get 99% positive feedback. 1% of the time, like, I'll receive a somewhat negative comment.
They have MagicCon here.
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally, before I go into MagicCon, but for me personally, I think it got big at a big point of, you know, disdain and people upset of what I was doing. And now it's kind of just, you know, this 2013 rolled into 2014. And I'm sure as we get into 2015, people are just going to stop caring.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, another analogy I would make is I bet when magic books first started showing up in public libraries, there probably was a little bit of backlash.
Yeah.
Probably, I would imagine. I wasn't around at the time. But now it's like no problem. It's of course it's going
to
be
probably seemed as a way to sell an idea. It's yeah. just like, all right, if you want to learn how to do this, pay me X amount of dollars and I'll teach you.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the backlash that we do see, it's generated from, you know, companies that are making money and they're kind of just trying to protect their investments, which makes sense.
Right.
Like, I don't blame them. But, you know, at the same time, the world is changing at a very fast rate. Technology is expanding, and the way that we teach, the way that we learn, we need to adapt to the modern mediums. And as of today, the best medium really is YouTube. I don't think there can be any debate about that.
It's crazy. Never would have thought that as a 13-year-old kid learning magic that I'd be living in Marina Del Rey where people go to retire and be making YouTube videos for a full-time job.
What a life.
Unreal. Well, they have MagicCon over here in Anaheim, and they have VidCon coming up here pretty soon, too.
Yeah.
VidCon's at the end of January, at the end of June. It's June 26th through the 28th, and my birthday is June 21st.
Okay, nice.
So what we've been doing lately is Alex's birthday was just on Cinco de Mayo, and so instead of celebrating birthdays, we're celebrating birth weeks. So we started celebrating Alex's birth week on April 29th or
so
30th
or whatever. Every day of the week?
We partied every single day of the week. And it would all build up until, like, and we started at like 100%, you know?
Right.
And we'd try to, it was like we'd go putt-putt golfing one night, the next day we go to a beach day, the next night we all go out for dinner, and then finally led to his actual birthday. So my birth week is starting on my birthday, June 21st. It's going to go into VidCon.
Oh,
my birth week's going to end at VidCon.
I can imagine some fun going on.
Oh, man. So, if you guys like YouTube and YouTubers, and I also know I'm pretty confident Kaylin Morelli's going to be there, and Zach Mueller, and a bunch of the up-and-coming magicians who are trying to, that are in the magic community, that are seemingly trying to transition into the YouTube community.
Yeah, I think they're starting to pay attention now.
Yeah.
So a lot of the well-known magicians are getting on YouTube now.
It's crazy.
So yeah, it's going to be see who shows up at.
So if you are going to go to VidCon, then cool. And if you do magic, then be prepared to be in a world of competition and alpha male and very territorial magicians. Because that's how it was last year. And
it'll be fun to see these guys come out.
If you guys are in VidCon, the cool thing about VidCon is if you can get a price for a hotel, then you're good. Like, you don't actually have to go and purchase a ticket and go in VidCon.
Yeah,
you go into the actual stage area.
So I've actually never been to VidCon. What happens if you do go in? Is it just people
basically they have the whole, it's at the Anaheim Convention Center.
Okay.
And they have, you can go up a flight of escalators and they have panels where people talk about, like, oh, here's how to get more views, here's how to brand yourself better. And that will happen throughout the days, but you need a certain pass to hear those.
I gotcha.
But you don't need to get it. Right. And then they have inside the actual convention center is all the commercialism, you know, Maker Studios.
All merchandise and
stuff. Yeah, the people trying to sell their product and all that crap.
I gotcha. Trying to sign people up for their own.
So, yeah, the actual VidCon part of the video convention is just people trying to sell stuff. And
I gotcha.
And the other thing about it is you can go up to any one of your friends or anyone there, make friends with anyone fast.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, can I borrow your pass really quick? I want to go check out the thing. They'll just put their pass around your neck. You go in there.
Yeah.
But
So for the people who are interested in buying tickets, how much do those go for?
Man, nowadays they've been going anywhere between $100 and $120.
Okay.
So it's not bad for a 3-day thing because it's the 26th, 27th, and 28th, last weekend of June. I'll be there. Hopefully Assad will be there. I know Caitlin Morelli is going to be there, and Steve Cardinal is going to be there. All of these YouTubers, like I wouldn't be, Jenna Marbles may show up. Everyone's favorites, all the British YouTubers, whatever, not just Magic, but. I mean, if you're trying to start a YouTube channel and you want to meet and interact with people and get in people's vlogs, and that's a quick, easy way to collaborate with a lot of different people fast.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, for those, I guess let's just give a little bit of advice there. For you upcoming YouTubers, people who are interested in producing YouTube videos and getting noticed, the most important strategy, in my opinion, is collaboration.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure you've seen that in your experience as well.
That's the hugest biggest thing that you can do outside of your control, because you rely on other people at the same time.
Right.
The biggest thing in your control is be consistent.
Of course, before you go out and try to find people to collaborate with, you have to have good content on your channel. You have to be good at something. You have to have a reason for people to come want to watch your stuff. Right. Right. And but once you have that, you know, what you really should do is try to find channels that are bigger than yours, not too much bigger, because then, you know, your chances are pretty slim. But then finding a way to do some kind of partnership, some kind of
video together.
Yeah,
that's the biggest way to quickly grow subscribers.
Absolutely.
Fast.
Yeah. And preferably someone in your same niche, of course, and that way you can just kind of share an audience. I mean, that's what we did to a large degree.
Right.
So for those of you who don't know, I started my channel about, I would say it's approaching 3 years. What about you?
I started in 2009.
Okay, but then you took like a big break, right?
Yeah. I took like an 8-month break, 8 or 9 month break.
Okay, I gotcha. And,
It essentially took me 3 years to build 4,000 subscribers.
Right.
3 years. And so I wasn't doing it for, you know, and anyone who says, oh, Jarek 120, he makes these videos for the money, or he makes it to expose the business or whatever. It's just like,
no, it's,
I worked my ass off for 3 years to get,
get
4,000.
So it took 3 years to get 4,000 subscribers. In the last year, how many subscribers did you get, if you had to guess?
In the, this time last year,
yeah,
I probably had 40 or 50,000.
So, wow, like, what is that, 450,000 subscribers in a year?
Yeah.
So that's how it goes, you guys. In the beginning, don't expect to get too much traffic. It takes time. But once you have quality content, once you become kind of an authority in your niche, it just snowballs. And then you really see the growth. But kind of going back to that, I think, because I get messages all the time of people saying, hey, could you help me out? Could you give me a shout out?
Right.
And, you know, of course, like, we're good people and we want to help people out. But when you get, you know, 2 or 3 of those messages every day, you can't help out everybody. It just doesn't work like that.
Right.
So I guess my advice to you guys, and, you know, I'm sure you have some advice afterwards, is you really have to have something that you can exchange.
That you can offer.
Yeah. Okay. There's an exception. If you're extremely, extremely talented, then, you know, you can probably approach a much bigger channel. And
yeah.
They'll recognize
that. Like Kaylin did a video with Vitaly.
Yeah.
Strictly because Kaylin could demonstrate to Vitaly that he had good ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that's the one exception where you can kind of just message people and maybe get a collaboration. But you're not in that position yet. You have to, it's the law of exchange, you know, it has to be a win-win situation.
Right.
So you have to find a way that you can benefit the person you're trying to collaborate with, and then in return, you'll benefit yourself.
The only unfortunate thing about that is, because this is what happened to me, is you may go to someone with an idea and be like, hey, I have these different ideas, mm-hmm. and then you guys end up doing one of them, and it blows up on their channel, which mm-hmm. gets you exposure,
yeah.
but it doesn't give you, it doesn't pay your bills.
Right, right.
And same with vice versa. It's like you go to someone, you give them good ideas, you're running the risk of them just taking that idea and them doing it themselves.
Right.
So just be careful who you tell your ideas to. Be careful who you trust. It's so weird how YouTube can be, I don't know if you've personally experienced it, but YouTube can be a very selfish place. Like a very, in order for me to be winning, you have to be a losing place.
But it doesn't need to be, which is such a strange mentality for me, because YouTube, it's like...
It's the same with Magic.
Yeah, but... YouTube is such a great place where you can, if you want, partner with other people and develop these alliances. But yeah, I see what you're saying, where people are very competitive in terms of, oh, like, I have this many more subscribers than you, I have this many more views than you, and, you know, they're just trying to get to number one. Whereas, you know, it's a community platform, you right. know, together to the top. That's how I like to think about it.
Together to the top. I've been talking with Asad from 52 Cards. And then I guess the last question I said is, do you have a favorite magician?
Ooh.
Or did you growing up?
Yeah, growing up it was David Blaine. Cliche answer.
Mm-hmm.
But for a good reason. The guy's the man, you know? I really admired how David Blaine was able to create those effects without ever taking advantage of the camera. Well, I guess maybe on a few occasions he kind of did a little bit. But he kept the integrity of the performances in his TV show, you know, in his street specials. And I just respect that, you know, because there are other magicians out there who will abuse the camera like none other, you know, and they'll create great TV, I guess, for, you know, a lot of people, but then it sets up all these unreasonable expectations for magicians. And as a magician, like, there's no appreciation for that.
Right.
You know, but David Blaine, extremely talented guy. I really like his presentation style. And I admire the guy.
And
other than him, sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, go on.
Okay, other than him, a few others I'll throw out that I really like. Darren Brown, of course.
Oh yeah,
ridiculously
best
talented.
Best hypnotist in the world, and best, probably best in the world at what he does right now.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've seen, and some of you may not be aware of this, but back in the day, like 10 years ago, Darren Brown was a fantastic card guy. Have you seen him do sleight of hand with cards?
Yeah, well, I have the Devil's Picture Book.
Okay, for the magicians who don't know what we're talking about, he released a DVD series a while back called The Devil's Picture Book, where he actually teaches some of his favorite card effects. And it's some of the
They're
best
They're not card- easy.
They're not easy at all, but it is some of the best card magic I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And sometimes it...
And well, he does, he throws mentalism in there too.
Yeah, that's his thing. Like, he combines mentalism with classic conjuring techniques.
He essentially forces people to pick a card by the way he talks.
Yeah.
He says, well, I can't do it like him. But he will get you to think of a specific card just by the way he says
certain
specific
things.
Words.
He does these, like, psychological forces. And it's just really cool stuff. But what really... twists my mind is that he was so good at that, and he just completely stopped doing it, and then he went to something else and he became the best at that.
Unreal.
The guy is just ridiculously talented. Make sure you guys check out his stage show. It's called Enigma. The full thing is on YouTube. One of the best.
He also did Svengali.
Svengali was
great. Spectacular show. Enigma is a new show of his.
I don't know if it's exactly new, but you know, it's one of his really, really good stage shows.
Gotcha. And do you have a favorite card trick that you like to perform, or a favorite magic trick that you like to perform? Not even necessarily cards, but...
If I'm performing for somebody for the first time, I'll usually just stick to the classics. I'll do something like a triumph routine, like an in-the-hands triumph, or I'll do a biddle trick, of course.
Yeah.
Ambitious card. I'll do two card Monty. I'll do
the hand sandwich.
Hand
here
sandwich.
Than, here than there.
I'll do four ace production. Stuff like that. I think the classics are classics for a very good reason. They're very practical to do. They pack a big punch, and they allow for so many different types of presentations where you can really kind of just make it your own.
Yeah.
So that's the stuff that I like to perform. You know, there's a quote, I can't remember who said it, but it was like a well-known magician, and he said that he could spend the rest of his life practicing three tricks.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth in that, you know? So for you upcoming magicians, my advice would be to really master just a select few routines, effects, before you go out and try to learn like every way to control a card.
Right.
Or every sandwich trick that exists, you know? Because it's an easy trap to fall in. I went through it.
I've been doing the same four or five tricks for the last 10 years.
That's a good thing.
And I've learned, you know, I'll learn some new stuff. Like Wayne Houghton just came out with his one needle. And as good as of a trick that is, I've never performed it yet.
Yeah.
I'd like to, but it's just like, I have all these to my arsenal, which I feel is so strong.
Right, right.
And so I always have told people growing up, like, what sounds better, showing 100 tricks that took you forever to learn to one person, or showing one trick that you've mastered to 100 people?
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, if you have so many tricks, you become the trick monkey. This is kind of going back to what we were talking about.
To the magic kid.
Yeah, you become the magic kid if you have, like, a new trick every time. And that's not what I want. I'm sure that's not what you want.
Right.
Maybe some people want that, and that's fine.
I also know there are kids who are just like, I want to be the magic kid. And then...
Yeah. Well, they do now.
Right, they do now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just one of those, be careful what you wish for. Right. For sure. So, like, just be mindful. Like, as both Asad and I have been there, I personally did not. Once I had the title, I was never a fan of it.
Right.
Because the magic kid follows you until you're 19 or 20 or 21. It's like, I'm not a kid anymore, yo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think here's one of the keys to combating that. You decide when you perform. You don't take, like, when someone says, hey, show me a trick, you don't feel obliged to perform.
Right.
You tell them, hey, I perform when I'm inspired to. And right now, I just don't really feel like it.
Exactly.
You know, so it's on your, how do you say that? Your command, or
it's your rules. It's your decision.
Yeah, it's your rules. So I mean, like, when people ask you to do a trick and you don't really feel like it, what do you say?
Sometimes I'll say I didn't bring a deck of cards, or I'll say I'm not prepared. Okay. Or I'll say maybe a little later.
Yeah.
Or I'll say, hold on, I'm just kind of getting settled in.
Yeah.
Usually, nowadays, people don't ask me to anymore, just because we're adults. But back when I was a kid and people would say, oh, you know, show me a trick, or you got to see my friend do this magic trick, it would back then, I guess I would do it just because I was trying to seek approval. Mm-hmm. But I guess nowadays, and growing up as I kind of smartened up, it would just kind of be that, oh, I didn't bring anything. And I wouldn't. Like, I'd leave the deck at home, or I'd forget it on purpose. Or
I've done that before.
So, yeah.
Okay, and here's a kind of a flip side to that question. I'm sure there are moments where you actually want to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, like, when I have those moments, I don't feel like going around and asking people, hey, do you want to see magic? I just don't like doing
that. Yeah, it's like you want them to approach you.
Exactly.
Type of deal.
So do you have any strategies for making that happen?
I like to think the whole mentality of being a fisherman, like kind of reel them in type of deal, versus a hunter trying to, you know, there's the hunter in the club. Like, you'll be in a nightclub and you'll see the hunter who is just looking for the girl to approach and just looking around, instead of the chill, relaxed guy who's sitting at the table fishing them in. But that works with magic as well, just because a big good strategy I have that worked for me is I would go to a friend and I'd be like, here, let me just show you this, like, really quick.
Yeah.
And what that would do is either get me more in the mood to just go up to someone, or it would catch someone else's eye, or I'd go to an acquaintance that I'm comfortable with not even a friend necessarily, just if we're at a party and it's like, oh, here, let me show you this like cool thing I've been working on.
Yeah.
That's going to get the attention of a bunch of people fast.
Yeah.
So
how do you introduce yourself with regards to magic? Do you call yourself a magician?
I've never say I'm a magician. Okay. I never tell anyone that I'm a magician.
Yeah.
I say nowadays, because of just my job, it's just, hey, I'm a, I teach magic on the internet.
Okay.
So I'll say I'm a close up magician, but I'll never just out and say I'm a magician.
Right.
I'll say I do perform close up magic and sleight of hand.
Yeah.
That's kind of my approach.
Yeah. It's got the stereotype with it, magician. It's something that I'm trying to deal with internally.
Yeah.
I still introduce myself to people as magician sometimes. Sometimes it's okay, but then sometimes I see it trigger something I don't like.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't like it. It just has a bad...
I think... I'm hoping that...
I think other people love magicians and they love the idea of a magician, but I think it automatically, like, I can't take you as seriously anymore or something.
Right. Well, it depends on the person. Like, I know some people, when they think magician, they automatically think, like, kids' birthday parties.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's changing now, I hope. But slowly.
Right.
So I think as magicians, we do have almost a responsibility to make it cool again.
Yeah. You know,
because we're being attacked by all these cheesy stereotypes. And
or maybe it's all in our head.
Or maybe it is. Yeah.
Well, we got to get going. We got to wrap this podcast up. It's been the first one. Asad, where can people find you and subscribe to your YouTube channel? And
get your shit in. You can search 52 Cards on YouTube. You'll find it. Cards with a K. C was taken, so I had to go with a K.
It looks cool, though.
Yeah, it looks cool.
52cards.com.
I messaged the guy who owns 52 Cards with a C, proper spelling, because he's selling it. There's nothing on the website. Guess how much he wants for it.
$500,000.
Not that much. He wants $20,000 for it.
Damn.
I didn't even respond. I was like, that's just ridiculous. I probably would have paid like a couple hundred tops.
Right.
$20,000? Come on now.
So 52cards.com with the K. It's cool that you still got the K.
Yeah.
52cards.com.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I wish I had YouTube/52cards, but whatever.
You may be able to change in the future. I know people who have been able to get, depending on...
Possibly.
Talking to the right people, I know it's impossible to get over to YouTube. But
hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. I'm Jarek120, here with Asad. 52cards, decks and contest. Subscribe to him. And check out How to Disturb Reality, the YouTube channel. I'll try to be doing these podcasts more often, so come back and give it a listen, the 120 Podcast.